From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're talking today about North Carolina's House Bill 2. You might know it as the bathroom bill. Signed by Governor Pat McCrory just last month, HB 2 catapulted North Carolina into the national spotlight for requiring people to use the bathroom that corresponds to their gender at birth. Titled the Public Facilities Privacy and Security Act, the law also restricts local governments' ability to raise the minimum wage or pass anti-discrimination ordinances of their own. Rapid passage of this law during a special session came in response to an ordinance enacted by the city of Charlotte that would have allowed people to use restrooms based on gender identity. The fallout from the law continues almost daily. PayPal quickly scuttled plans to build a hub in Charlotte. Deutsche Bank decided not to expand in North Carolina. A letter of concern to the governor over the law was signed by 80 major company executives, including CEOs Tim Cook of Apple and Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook. Raleigh's Tourism Bureau announced earlier this week that it has lost nearly $3 million in business due to travel cancellations. Some estimates put statewide revenue losses at nearly $500 million so far. Bruce Springsteen, Boston, Pearl Jam, and Cirque du Soleil have canceled North Carolina shows. This past weekend, author and humorist David Sedaris ultimately chose to fulfill his concert date at the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. At his Sunday night show, Sedaris announced his $20,000 fee would go to Equality NC. And just last night, the Wilmington City Council passed a surprise resolution calling for repeal of the law. Raleigh's City Council passed a similar resolution. Also yesterday, a federal appeals court ruled in favor of a transgender teen's right to use his bathroom of choice at school. Joining us by phone today to talk about HB 2 is one of its sponsors. North Carolina Representative Chris Millis is a Republican from District 16, covering Pender County and Western Onslow County. Representative Millis, welcome to Coastline.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to be on.
We're glad to have you here. We also have the Director of Advancement for Equality North Carolina, an LGBT advocacy group that has been at the center of the fight to repeal the law. Matt Hershey, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rachel. Glad to be here.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. What impact do you think HB 2 will have on the state? Is this about privacy rights? Will it make North Carolinians safer? Is it a death blow to economic expansion? Tell us what you think. A bit later in the program, we'll take your phone calls. You can reach us by email right now at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastlinehqr. Representative Chris Millis, this appellate court ruling that just came down yesterday in favor of a transgender teen who was born female but identifies as male and wants to use that restroom. The court is saying Title IX protects the rights of students to use the bathroom that corresponds with their gender identity. And of course, in a statement, Governor Pat McCrory says he disagrees with the objective to force high schools to allow boys and girls restrooms, locker rooms, or shower facilities. What impact do you think this federal court ruling will have on North Carolina's law?
Great question. I mean, in all honesty, we legislated according to the actual intentions of what Title IX was authored as well as the understanding of what the intent is of a federal constitution. And so when you have actually judges who actually ruled after the fact, even though that other courts across the nation, including federal courts, have actually ruled opposite to this. This definitely creates a conflict that would have to be resolved at a higher court. But, of course, it doesn't affect how we legislated back in April, nor what I believe it will affect how we'll legislate moving forward until you actually have in a higher court actually resolve this conflict among the other courts. And, again, unlike the aspects of what occurred in Virginia, what is actually established by way of House Bill 2 actually allows local school districts to actually accommodate transgendered individuals while they also respect the privacy rights of students to be able to use the actual bathroom facility, locker room facility, and shower facility according to their biological sex. And I also will say in regard to the opening, that in terms of it's not more or less defined as how you were born, as an individual can amend their birth certificate in the state of North Carolina. So just wanted to add that as well to kind of set the record straight.
So corresponding with what's on your birth certificate.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that. And Representative Millis, you said that the law in North Carolina does make accommodations for transgender students. What are those accommodations? What could a high school do?
Yeah, I mean, specifically in the actual House Bill 2, there is accommodations for local school districts to be able to actually accommodate an individual who may identify or express themselves as someone who is opposite of their biological sex by way of providing accommodations through a unisex bathroom. Again, all those are actually carefully and clearly identified by way of House Bill 2, and a lot of what is actually being shared across the state and across the nation about House Bill 2 is a lot of misconceptions, a lot of half-truths. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be on the show today to actually hopefully shed some light about what it actually does and set the record straight about what it doesn't do.
And those are some of the issues that we do want to get into. But I have to ask, Representative Millis, the short session begins next Monday, April 25th. Why was the passage of this bill so urgent that it required the governor to call a special session? Why couldn't this wait for a more robust debate?
Great question. Well, first and foremost, the governor didn't call the special session. The special session actually was called on behalf of three-fifths of the legislative body and more or less forced the governor's hand on this. And the reason why that we had to act with urgency was clearly in protection of what was actually established by way of the Charlotte's Ordinance. And what Charlotte did was it actually mandated upon all private businesses to accommodate individuals by way on the gender they identify as or the gender they actually express themselves as without defining what gender identity was or defining what gender expression was, and also would create a situation that could actually violate the privacy rights of individuals, children, men, and women, as you would actually have a situation which has occurred in other states who have passed similar ordinances and even outside of the United States, where you're actually allowing an individual who is not transgendered to actually just claim or identify that they express themselves, even though they're a biological man, as a woman, and actually have access and in some of the most intimate of situations, like the locker room of a gymnasium or the actual shower facility at a YMCA. And really, it was an urgent need to actually intervene before that Charlotte Ordinance went into effect and actually protect the privacy rights of the innocent that actually could have been violated. And I'll say this, that while we respect the rights of all individuals to identify and express themselves as they please, that it clearly what Charlotte did, it actually butted up against the respect also of the privacy rights of individuals and the loss of innocence of really an individual being able to walk into a bathroom of the opposite sex and disrobe right next to a child, or disrobe right next to a woman. And again, so at the end of the day, it was more or less an urgent matter that we had to intervene. Of course, while we were there, we took care of also the aspects of the anti-discrimination ordinance that was non-uniform and illegal and unconstitutional that Charlotte passed, and more or less reaffirmed what existing law was in regard to that as well. But the urgency was solely around the protection of privacy in the bathrooms, locker rooms, and showers of private businesses.
Matt Hershey of Equality NC, if people are permitted to choose public restrooms based on their preference and not based on the gender on their birth certificate, are we likely to see more instances of predatory behavior in bathrooms and locker rooms?
So I want to unpack that question a little bit further, if you don't mind, Rachel, because
sure.
At the end of the day, gender identity and gender expression is not a preference. This is how people live their lives on a day-to-day basis. A transgender woman is simply a woman. A transgender man is simply a man. And 100% of the time, they live their lives that way. This is not somebody who makes an off choice to be some type of predator that will walk into a restroom. And I don't know about you or your listeners, but personally, when I go to a restroom, it's not my goal to cause a scene, and I I know from my trans friends and family members that that's not the case that they want to do either. They simply go to the restroom to use the restroom or to go to the locker room to change and move on about their day. This is not some pivotal point about their day that they want to just sneak into bathrooms. And so I actually do want to address that. Frankly, at the end of the day, there has not been one cited instance of a transgender person using this law for ill gain. And the idea that somehow a predator would then use the law for ill gain is, at the end of the day, on its premise, I just don't understand why we need to make a law about some hypothetical, maybe, I don't know if this is going to happen situation. And it's that has been fact-checked by multiple media outlets as well as third-party fact-checkers.
And Matt Hershey, most people at this point are familiar with the very broad arguments against this bill, but it's been called by LGBT advocacy groups and civil rights groups a very broad anti-LGBT piece of legislation. What specifically, besides the restroom issue in this bill, is so offensive that you joined a lawsuit with the ACLU over it?
Well, at the end of the day, what it does is it really affects how Title IX is implicated in the state and the Fourth Circuit, which, by the way, is one of the most conservative courts of appeals in the country, reaffirmed that this law really does jeopardize Title IX and its implications on education pieces. And we also, you know, the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution is at play here. At the end of the day, yes, we now have a statewide non-discrimination statute, finally. We are very happy to see that. But to explicitly leave out members of the LGBT community from that, when the LGBT community is still a very marginalized group and one that faces constant discrimination in the workplace and at home, is frankly on its face discriminatory.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about HB2, better known around the country as North Carolina's bathroom bill. With us today is bill sponsor Representative Chris Millis, Equality NC's Matt Hershey, and joining us in the next segment, a University of North Carolina Wilmington faculty member who studies and teaches courses on gender issues. We'll also open the phone lines now, so if you'd like to weigh in, you can give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. And with me today is Matt Hershey of Equality NC, an LGBT advocacy group, as well as North Carolina Representative Chris Millis, who sponsored HB2, the controversial bill that requires people to use public restrooms corresponding with the gender on their birth certificates. It also stops local governments from enacting anti-discrimination ordinances and from raising the minimum wage. Joining the conversation now is Chadwick Roberts, an assistant professor in communication studies at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. He also teaches courses on sexuality and gender at the university. Chadwick Roberts, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me.
And of course, we're inviting you to join the conversation. We do have a full phone bank right now, but later in the program, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Chadwick Roberts, just explain to us first what it means to be transgender. What is a transgender person?
A transgender person is going to be someone whose gender identity does not match up with their sex assigned at birth.
Is this a psychological disorder?
It is not classified as a psychological disorder any longer. The designation for the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual as a gender dysphoria, so a discomfort with your sex designation at birth.
And when you take a look at HB2, this law that was recently passed that has gained national attention, what are you hearing from folks in the transgender community about what this says to them when Representative Millis talks about schools, for instance, making accommodations for kids who are transgender?
Well, students that I've had that are transgender members of the community are worried about their own safety. Statistics tell us that 61% of trans people in the U.S. have reported physical violence as a result of their gender identity. 64% of trans citizens have reported sexual assaults, again, associated with their gender identity. So there's fear There's fear associated with not being able to make a choice for your own safety, feeling disregarded as if your safety isn't being considered as part of this discussion.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the economic, social, and political implications of HB2. With us today to answer your questions are North Carolina Representative Chris Millis, Matt Hershey, Advancement Director for Equality North Carolina, and Chadwick Roberts, Assistant Professor in Communication Studies at UNCW. And Michael from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to ask, how is HB2 practically going to be enforced? It seems strange to me. What, are we going to have potty police or something?
Actually, Michael, you raise a point that I've heard raised over and over again. Representative Chris Millis, what is the talk about how something like this would be enforced? I think even a sheriff from Richland County in South Carolina weighed in and said he's not going to ask his personnel to inspect people's genitalia. What do you say to that question?
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Again, great question. And the one thing that needs to be understood is that House Bill 2 reaffirms what existing laws have been and more or less preempts what was the illegal and unconstitutional action by the Charlotte City Council. So in terms of the actual aspects of enforcement and there being a quote-unquote potty police is not the case. In the same aspects, as if we didn't act and we actually sit there and allowed individuals to just claim not actually claim to identify as a member of the opposite sex and to actually express themselves of the opposite sex and be able to walk into a bathroom, locker room, or shower facility and violate the privacy rights of another just based on what their identity, that's the even more problematic enforcement aspects. And that's what other local governments across the nation have actually experienced, the fact that it can't be enforced and you're actually legally protecting someone who actually claims to be something that they're not and actually providing a gateway for sexual predators. It's not hypothetical, it's actual. So in regard to a potty police, it's never been the case in the past and it won't be the case moving forward. It just more or less clarifies existing privacy rights in the most intimate of places. And again, for anyone to claim that it does anything more than that is absolutely incorrect.
All right. And we have Paul from Carolina Beach. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a general comment. It seems to me that if we just take a step back, and how many high school boys would love to gain access to a girl's locker room? And, you know, how many, and let's say that all transgender people are perfect and, you know, never have ill will. So let's just take that argument off the table. How many pedophiles and how many rapists would love the opportunity to be to access the opposite sex's bathroom? And so, in my opinion, this really seems to be more of a public safety issue than a LGBT rights issue. So that was my comment.
Thank you so much for your call, Paul. Matt Hershey from Equality NC, I want to ask you about this because this is the picture that we're seeing painted over and over again of, you know, the father of a young daughter is horrified at the notion of a straight man dressing up as a woman so he can come into the locker room and watch his daughter undress. What do you say to that?
I would like to directly respond to that and say this. If we are so concerned about rapists and predators and the like entering into locker rooms, why aren't we focusing on laws that combat rape and that deal with rape prevention and deal with sexual predators and making sure that there are tougher penalties there for those people that do very despicable things that I personally and as an organization, as a community, we are completely opposed to. Transgender women, particularly transgender women of color, are at higher risk for sexual violence in the bathroom, and they are at higher risk for violence in public places. And so to say that somehow that we don't want to protect women and children is ridiculous. I mean, at the end of the day, I have a mother, I have sisters, I have aunts and uncles and cousins, and I very, very care much, very much about their safety in the restroom. But we also have to talk about the safety of trans people in this discussion. And I feel like that's really being left out here in order to scapegoat part of this argument towards bathrooms, right? So we really have to think about who we're talking about when we pass these laws. We're not talking about predators. We're talking about very marginalized, very hurt people that need these vital protections, and they need them very, very much.
Chadwick Roberts.
I would add to that a historical perspective. These same arguments about protecting innocence, right, remind me a lot of arguments being made to justify lynching, right? Protecting white womanhood and white innocence. All of those arguments to me sound reminiscent of arguments used to justify horrifying violence in the past against a minority.
And Representative Millis, I do want to ask you about this because I've heard comparisons drawn also about this law with segregation from the 1960s. And I've heard people say, well, how is this different from that drinking water law or that drinking fountain law? So what would you say to people who are saying this is a civil rights issue?
Wonderful question. I'm actually glad that the professor actually brought this up because it's something needs to definitely be discussed. And that is, one thing we need to understand about House Bill 2 is that when reaffirming existing law, local governments still have the freedoms to pass non-discriminatory protections for their employees. Every private business has the freedom to pass those same non-discriminatory policies and actually to have their own policies involving and surrounding bathrooms, locker rooms, and showers. They all have that freedom existing. The only thing that House Bill 2 did was actually to prevent a local government to non-uniformly, which is against the state constitution, to actually impose regulations upon private business. All these businesses have the freedom to actually do exactly how these other two individuals on the line actually are advocating for. It's about the mandate against other private businesses. So that needs to be understood first and foremost because it actually parallels and dovetails exactly into the whole civil rights discussion. And I believe when individuals bring up the civil rights discussion, they need to understand the truth about what it was in the past, meaning that in the Democrat-controlled South, it was actually laws that were passed, laws from the state that were mandated upon private businesses to actually have a segregation aspect and discriminate against an immutable aspects of someone's race. It was absolutely horrible, wrong, an individual that, I mean, I definitely don't agree with, but it is in no way comparison of what's going on here in the state of North Carolina. There is no state law that is actually mandating that there be separate facilities for transgender, that is mandating that you must discriminate against an individual based on their sexual preferences.
Well, that Representative Millis, if I may ask here for clarification, you're saying if there's no mandate, there's no mandate requiring separate accommodations for transgender people, what do you say to the question of safety for a transgender person? A transgender woman walking into a man's restroom is going to be at risk, and there are documented instances. Chadwick Roberts, do you have statistics on that? Violence against transgender people?
Yes, I do. So majority of the victims of hate, violence, homicide, 72% in 2013 were transgender women. So they're overrepresented in violent situations. So they have a right to sort of fear for their safety and have a safety concern. They're 3.7 times more likely to experience police violence. Transgender women of color are at more of a risk of suffering from police violence. So that the history of violence against this community, it's documented. There are statistics that should give us pause.
Representative Millis?
Yeah, I mean, again, let's just say, for the sake of debate, that we actually remove the aspects of individuals being able to falsely identify and falsely claim themselves just to have access to these facilities in the most private situations, like we've already discussed. Let's just take that off the table and say that doesn't happen. We're not talking about transgender individuals being sexual predators. We're talking about individuals being sexual predators as a whole, not classifying anyone to be, you know, transgendered or not. We take it off the table, you're getting to the safety aspects of transgendered individuals. And it's very simple, is that private businesses have the freedom to provide those accommodations, and the individuals who actually are in fear for the safety can actually feel free to use those aspects of businesses to actually do that, or unlike what was done for the Charlotte City Council, illegally and unconstitutionally, anybody can offer a bill to the General Assembly to actually do what the members on this phone are advocating for, and they can do that. It just has to be done through a legal and proper process, not something that's done not by way of local control, but by way of local tyranny. So that would be my response. And again, if the statistics and the facts that are being claimed are actually true, I don't see why the representative government wouldn't, you know, take those claims in and actually provide proper accommodations if those claim statistics and whatnot are true. But again, private businesses have the ability to accommodate today, as well as the aspects of local governments when it comes to anti-discrimination.
Chadwick Roberts.
Rachel.
Yeah. Matt, I hear you. You want to weigh in a second, but let's let Chadwick go ahead.
17 states and 200 cities have ordinances similar to Charlotte, these tyrannical ordinances. Where's the evidence that this puts women and children at harm? Where's the evidence? Where are the statistics that this these ordinances, which have been in existence for decades in many places, cause women and children to be put in peril? Where's the evidence?
Yeah.
Can I respond,
Rachel?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, let's let Representative Millis respond, and then Matt Hershey will get to you.
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, there has to be a proper process in regard to local laws and local controls, and there's no doubt that this process can actually happen by way of the General Assembly. In the same manner, to directly answer your question, it's been documented and reported in Washington State and others that individuals actually have accessed these facilities, bathrooms, showers, and bathrooms, or in locker rooms, in the most intimate of situations, to actually gain access to be able to view individuals of the opposite sex.
Representative Millis, you're talking about sexual predators that have gone into locker rooms and bathrooms.
Yes, and again, it's happened in Washington State, it's happened in others,
Are we conflating transgender people with sexual predators?
Not at all. Again, all my comments that I've made and all my comments I'll continue to make, I basically have not classified sexual predators of being transgendered or non-transgendered. It's the aspects of a individual like myself. I can simply identify as a man or express myself as a woman and actually go into a woman's locker room, shower, or a bathroom facility in these other local governments that actually have passed these ordinances. So, again, the statistics and the facts are there. There's nothing hypothetical about the situation, and it is reality. And while I respect and compassionate against or passionate for the actual individuals who have gender identity and gender expression concerns, I'm also compassionate and also respectful for the rights of privacy of women, men, and children in these most intimate of situations.
Okay, let's let Matt Hershey weigh in from Equality NC.
Two things. I think directly I would challenge the representative's portrayal that somehow the General Assembly has been interested in passing protections for LGBT people. Our organization has supported legislation that has never once gotten out of committee for the past 12 years now that protects just public employees, which the governor did, and the governor only did after extreme backlash from the business community. So yes, certainly there is a process to go through, but I don't think there's much of an appetite to do it at the General Assembly right now. And responding directly to his claim about a person in Seattle, a predator, that has actually been debunked itself. There was a man presenting as a man who walked into a public restroom in protest of one of these laws and saying that he had the right to be there. And currently that case is in court, but I really doubt that a judge is going to think that that man is somehow a transgender person or somehow that he has a legal right to be there. At the end of the day, I think we can all agree that discrimination is bad. It's bad for business. It's bad for our brand as a state. And even if the law, even if the proponents of this law and supporters of this law want to say that it's not about discrimination, that's fine. But we should never pass a law that opens up our state to the kind of backlash that we've had in the last few days.
And I want to get to this email. Jack writes, this is for Representative Millis regarding the origin of HB2. Was the text, or at least some of the terms of HB2, provided to you by Alec? If not, who outside the North Carolina legislature provided at least some of the text or some of the terms? And when did the sponsors begin drafting HB2?
again, that is not the case in the lease bid. It was definitely authored by members of the Senate and members of the House, authored in direct response to what the Charlotte City Council did in order to actually reaffirm existing law and protect the privacy rights of all citizens of the state. And there's no way, shape, or form authored by some special interest group. And again, it went through the committee process as what actually has to be done by way of a special session. So everything was transparent out in the public. And again, you know, a lot of these false accusations that are being made are really unfortunate for the overall aspects of the debate. And the debate is, in reality, if local governments have the purview, specific purviews. Some of those are reserved to the state and more than happy to be introduced by way of the General Assembly. But we also had to act in order to protect the privacy rights of men, women, and children across the state. And definitely glad that we did what we did. And in no way, shape, or form is it discriminatory to actually reaffirm what the law has been prior to February of 2016 for hundreds of years. And the only thing that actually really did change was we put into the first time in the state statute, anti-discrimination statutes that actually directly mirror federal law.
Okay, and we have Sean Allam from Tech Mountain. Sean, welcome to Coastline. We have just a minute before we go to break. I'm going to keep you on the line, but tell us quickly what Tech Mountain is doing.
Yeah, so we are very involved with this issue. So we actually have taken a stance that we're not arguing about LGBT rights, as we believe that LGBT is an inherently discriminatory policy, and we support all members of our community. We actually believe that the policy directly contradicts our efforts here to build a tech and entrepreneurial innovative hub in southeastern North Carolina.
And so you're saying that you're actually concerned about the economic fallout locally from this law. All right.
Absolutely.
We're going to go to break in just a moment. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about HB2. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation with Representative Chris Millis, Matt Hershey of Equality NC, and Chadwick Roberts from the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. Our phone bank is full. If you would like to send us an email, you can do that at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at Coastline HQR. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Chadwick Roberts is here today. He teaches courses on gender at the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. We're also joined today by Matt Hershey of Equality NC and State Representative Chris Millis, a Republican from District 16, which includes Pender County and Western Onslow County. We're talking about HB2, the economic fallout, the social implications, and North Carolina's position in the national spotlight. We have a number of callers on the phone. Once again, our phone banks are full, but right now we have Sean Allam from Tech Mountain. And Sean, you were telling us about a petition that Tech Mountain has started. This is a local tech business incubator. And can you tell us how many people have signed the petition?
Yeah, to date we have over 225 people who submitted their info with representation from a wide array of businesses, public agencies, educational institutions, and just local citizens. Anybody else who wishes to add their voice to the conversation, they can go to visit techmountain.com.
There are other petitions out there calling for repeal of this bill. We heard about Scholars in North Carolina. That's a group of more than 500 faculty, graduate students, and staff representing more than 20 North Carolina colleges and universities. Representative Millis, when you hear things like this and the fact that Wilmington City Council just last night surprised everybody and passed a resolution calling for repeal of this bill, does that give you pause about any of this? What do you think about the local and the national reaction to this bill?
Yeah, great question. Well, first and foremost, it doesn't give me pause at all. The only thing that makes me want to do is actually to articulate the truth even more. And that is the truth about the bill, is, as I've said before, it reaffirms existing law that's actually been in place prior to February of 2016. So all the business decisions that have been made prior to that has been done under the same parameters. And so individuals and businesses moving forward who actually have believed the misconception about what this law is, I mean, I respect their rights to protest, but I want to make sure that individuals out there and your listeners know that private businesses have the right to have their own bathroom policies. Private businesses have the right to have their own non-discriminatory policies expanded upon our state non-discriminatory policies that, again, directly mirrors federal law. And local governments like the city of Wilmington, they have the freedom to pass expansion above non-discriminatory policies that we have as a state that, again, directly mirrors federal law. So, again, that freedom is existing, and it continues to exist beyond HB2. HB2 only rolled back an unconstitutional and illegal ordinance that the Charlotte City Council passed, while it also makes clear that local governments, while they can have their own policies upon their own employees, they can't mandate it non-uniformly onto private businesses. It has to be done uniformly by way of state government. So those businesses, they're free to make those decisions, but I hope they would make those decisions based on truth and not misconception that's been spun up and just repeatedly shared, not just in the state, but across the nation.
And we have an email from Susan who writes, do the supporters of HB2 realize they've made it illegal for a mother to take her four-year-old son into the women's restroom? And I think that...
Can I respond to that, Rachel?
Sure, sure.
HB2 specifically accommodates that situation. It is outlined directly in the statute that a mother can take their child, regardless of the sex of the child, into the bathroom. That is not the case. Again, this is another example of the lies and misconceptions that's continued to be spread all across the state and nation. So HB2 accommodates for all those situations.
Chadwick Roberts.
There are 20 pediatric endocrinologists that called HB2 flawed, harmful, hurtful, and these are North Carolina pediatric endocrinologists that have signed a letter to Pat McCrory saying that this is flawed, harmful, and hurtful to children.
And we have Jane. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yes, I am just very, very saddened by some of the tautological reasoning of Representative Millis, and also the perpetuation of false information about transgender issues throughout the country. I feel that this bill is just another way of having people who really don't understand what LGBT issues are become divisive and spewing hatred. It is just so sad to me. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your call. And hello, Tom from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm surprised I got on the line. Anyways, my comment is towards the representative. Sir, I'm Buddhist, and I own a business here. I'm not going to stay on the line. But the thing is that I have a core tenet of that Buddhahood or compassion is in all people, and I know you have that. And I've heard that listening to you. But this bill does not feel like that, that we don't show compassion to all human beings, no matter how or who they are, how they represent, how they feel. As long as it's loving, I feel this bill does not represent this, us. We are not this. Hashtag, we are not this. That's my comment. I'll listen off the air.
Thank you so much for your comment, Tom. Representative Millis, you're talking about the fact that this is about uniformity and adhering to the state constitution. This is not about discriminating against a group of people. But when people weigh in and say, this feels like hatred, this feels like institutionalizing bigotry, it feels like discrimination, what do you say to that?
Well, again, I respect their feelings, and I definitely have compassion and feelings myself for all individuals. But again, those feelings are not rooted in truth about what the legislation did, what the intentions of the legislation were. And again, I respect their feelings, but I'd have to disagree that is not the case. It was definitely rooted in the aspects of respecting the rights of all citizens, including the gender that someone identifies as or expresses themselves as. But we actually had to step in and intervene as we also protect the privacy rights of the innocent in regard to this actually being done in a proper way. And so at the end of the day, I respect individuals' feelings, but I offer that I, as an individual, am most certainly compassionate and very caring for all citizens, but I also have to represent the actual innocent that would be affected by the harmful ordinance that Charlotte City Council passed, and I have to stand up for their rights just as I stand up for the rights of identity of other individuals.
Matt Hershey from Equality NC, is this about trying to force evolving and changing newer social norms on a traditional population that just isn't ready for this?
No, it's not. At the end of the day, as has been said before, 200 cities and 17 other states have had these policies for a long, long time, including our neighbors in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Charleston, and Columbia. They've all had these policies for a long time. And across the country, other places have had them for decades with no problem whatsoever. So at the end of the day, to say this is somehow a new and radical idea is really just infactual. I mean, I was just in Orlando at Disney World, and they've had this policy for a long time, too.
And we have Tara from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I think the bathroom conversation is definitely important. I don't understand how we can talk about protecting the rights of all citizens if part of the bill is actually removing the rights for LGBT to go to the state court and talk about being discriminated against. How can we talk about protecting rights in the same bill that we're, in effect, taking someone's rights? If you could answer that for me.
There was an executive order signed by Governor Pat McCrory very recently. Matt Hershey of Equality NC, how did that executive order change HB2?
Yeah, that executive order extended employment protections to public employees on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. And while I appreciate the governor's action on that, I think that really at the end of the day, the executive order is a Band-Aid for a brain hemorrhage. So at the end of the day, it just doesn't go far enough. And really, to address the rights of individuals to sue in state court, that just doesn't just affect LGBT people. It also affects people when they take racial discrimination claims or gender discrimination claims through state court. It basically removes the course of action there for folks, and that's incredibly problematic. Federal discrimination suits, while effective, take a long time and they're very expensive, and the majority of folks who are discriminated against don't have the opportunities to fulfill those requests. So that's a huge problem. But at the end of the day, the executive order basically directs the General Assembly to change it or to do something about it. It carries no legal weight as it pertains to the legal cause of action piece of this law.
Representative Millis, you've addressed the piece of this legislation that says local governments cannot enact their own anti-discrimination policies. However, this could be something that's considered in the upcoming short session. Do you think we need to expand anti-discrimination policies, and is that a discussion that you would support?
First and foremost, in regard to your question, local governments can expand non-discriminatory policies for their employees. Again, that's pre-House Bill 2 and it's post-House Bill 2. The only thing that they cannot do, which is, as it's been always in state law, is that they cannot mandate upon private business this actual expansion. So, again, just want to make sure we understand that the local, in terms of the question, local governments can expand non-discriminatory policies above and beyond what we've actually installed for the first time in North Carolina history that actually mirrors state anti-discrimination policies by way of state law. So
but they can't create an ordinance that imposes that on businesses within that municipality.
That's right. That's right. Private businesses have the freedom to decide whether they want to expand those non-discriminatory policies beyond state law, which, again, our state law directly mirrors federal law. So that is up to the private businesses, or a bill can be introduced in the General Assembly, because in the aspects of commerce, there is uniformity as specified by Article 2, Section 24 of the state constitution. So there's two things that have to happen. Either a uniform piece of legislation is passed to the General Assembly, or number two, someone amends the Constitution to allow the city of Charlotte or other cities to have non-uniform practices when it comes to commerce and labor.
If there,
I want to be clear.
If there was a bill that was introduced in the short session expanding anti-discrimination policies for the LGBT community, is that something that you would support? Would you welcome that discussion?
I most certainly am welcome to have that discussion and more than happy to have that debate whenever that debate actually occurs. But again, just to make sure we understand the question that's being asked here, is that in the past, in federal law and state law, it's actually been established that we're actually talking about protecting against discrimination on immutable characteristics and what an individual actually is. And when we actually talk about the actual claim of gender identity and gender expression, my question to the others and the listeners is that how do we more or less just only exclusively protect discrimination for gender identity and gender expression? Why is it not open beyond that? I mean, other individuals may identify as a different age. Other individuals may identify as something other than human. I mean, where do we draw the line, and actually how is that done? And I'm looking forward to having that debate in the General Assembly if a bill is filed.
Matt Hershey of Equality NC.
I have so many thoughts. I would like to make sure that we're clear here when we talk about these things, and when we talk about private businesses and not wanting to mandate things on them. Over 3/4 of the Fortune 500 and many, many small businesses in this state have these protections and support these protections. And to think that we are somehow mandating or somehow putting businesses in this really tough situation where they have to serve everybody and they can't turn away people for who they are. Like, I don't understand where the pushback is on that point, and I'm interested to hear the representative's response once I'm finished. But beyond that, going back to my point, 3/4 of the Fortune 500 have these protections, and they have had them for a long, long time because they know that it's good for businesses. Okay, business looks for communities. They look for states where their operations can thrive, and that means communities that the best and brightest talent will be attracted to, and communities in which employees will want to live, work, and raise a family. And so when we have these laws that are discriminatory or even perceived as discriminatory, that threatens and it threatens to disrupt our region's reputation. And so it's only natural that businesses are speaking out against this. At the end of the day, they want North Carolina to thrive. I want North Carolina to thrive. I've lived here for 25 years. I pay taxes in this state. I paid more than last year this year, but I'm happy to do that because I love North Carolina. And I want everybody to get the same opportunities here. So to somehow insist that people who are LGBT want special rights or want an inordinate amount of rights over anybody else is preposterous, and I rebuke the claim. I would also say that I'm not asking for state government to intervene into people's private lives. At the end of the day, what LGBT rights means to me is personal liberty and freedom of expression, and looking to continue that forward as we move through in this general debate about people's lives.
And Representative Millis, when you see corporations like Facebook and Apple and all of these large corporations that have said, we repudiate that law, does that not concern you about the economic future of North Carolina?
Absolutely not. And the reason being is because it still exists, again, pre-February of 2016, from post-February of 2016, that what is actually the policy and the statutes of the state has been the same. Nothing's been changed. Nothing's been passed. It's been discriminatory, or I believe rightfully perceived as discriminatory. Private businesses have the freedom to pass their own non-discriminatory policies, and that's continued to be protected by way of House Bill 2. All we're doing is protecting against a mandate that actually could violate the rights of privacy and the rights of conscience against private business owners. So again, while I respect the individual rights of individuals who may express or identify themselves as something other than maybe what they were born as, also respect the rights of conscience, the rights of privacy rights of the actual private employers in our state that have the freedom to choose. And to be honest with you, if Mr. Hershey claims, then there should be no problem, because if all the businesses are doing it, and everything should be good.
Representative Millis, thank you so much for that. I'd like to thank all of our guests, Representative Chris Millis, Matt Hershey of Equality NC, Chadwick Roberts of UNCW. Thanks for taking part in today's conversation. This could go on for another hour easily. We will post many of the email comments that we got online today at whqr.org. If you missed part of today's show, you can find it there later this afternoon or subscribe to the podcast from the iTunes Store. Join us next Wednesday on Coastline when we take a deep dive into the hog farming industry. That's Wednesday, April 27th at 12:06 here on HQR News 91.3 FM. Our producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Executive producer is Cleve Callison. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.